native Texan, or just got here as soon as you could. Welcome to Pratt on Texas. Here's your host, Robert Pratt.
My friends, we welcome to the program Jordan Berry, who worked on the campaign for Charles Perry, who won handily, as I put it, last night in the big six-man open election without a runoff. I mean, just really landslide proportions. And Jordan goes back to Charles Perry's first House race run when he unseated incumbent Rhino Delwyn Jones and has been making quite a name for himself supporting and working the campaigns of conservatives across the state of Texas. Jordan, I'm glad you took the time to join us today. I think there are some things, I don't know how much you want to talk about, you know, trade secrets, that kind of thing, but I think people are curious about how this kind of thing goes up, is put out. You got one guy talking about, well, the other guy had name ID. No question. Name ID already having a record. You know, if you got name ID like Delwyn Jones had and your record's bad, that can cost you an election. It's not just name ID. But sure, in Lubbock and areas, because he had a strong record, he had a positive name ID. But my gosh, your candidate took counties by massive margins in an open six-man race. I mean, in a two-man race, it would have been called blowout landslide that were hours away from his previous House district as when you drive in a car. I mean, how did this come about?
You know, our polling, which I trust, shows that at the end of the race, Charles Perry, Jody Arrington, and Delwyn Jones all had universal name ID amongst likely voters. So out of those three, they were on equal footing from a name ID point of view.
But you mean later in the process, after ads had been running and people had been out there in your polling, they all showed to have name ID?
Yeah, two weeks out. So 2 weeks ago, we showed all three at universal name ID. So at that point, the voters knew who they were. Mm-hmm. And for Jody, it was becoming a detriment. The more they were hearing about him on his own accord, just his own message, it was actually hurting them. It was really interesting to see that.
Well, talk about that. So you're saying you guys were doing, I guess, rolling polling? Or
yes, sir.
And so you're polling constantly and seeing the trends. As the ad campaign beefed up, the photos of George W. Bush, the other stuff, the ads, the radio, television, and postcards hit, you're saying that the more the Arrington campaign pushed out its own controlled message, that the worse it went for him. Expand on that.
Yeah, exactly. We do. I'm pretty poll heavy in just the sense of I like to know what's going on in a campaign.
Right.
And when we're polling, we're just asking people very simple questions. What are you hearing about the campaign? What are you hearing from the candidates? And tell us about it. And we just saw his unfavorables start to go up, Mr. Arrington's unfavorables start to go up. And when I would go into the verbatims, they just didn't like his message, especially on the attacks against Charles. They it didn't seem believable to them. They actually didn't like that he had come from the George W. Bush White House.
I want to interrupt you on that. The first, he was, let's do these two because I'll forget them as you go on. He was the first to, I don't like the term because I think you should pose your other guy and tell him why not to vote for him, but he was the first guy to go negative, as they call it, in this race and did so pretty hard. You're saying that voters were turned off by that and remain turned off by that?
Absolutely. They were clearly turned off about it. They also didn't believe the message. It didn't,
well, and that's the point. If you go negative and your message is right and believable, it can work for you, and I think you would agree with me on that. I mean, you know, if a guy has a criminal conviction and you tell everybody about it and it's real and everybody digs it up, I mean, that's not the same kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, if a sitting chairman votes against the voter ID bill and concealed handgun licenses, and it's true and you point that out, voters are likely to accept that versus this water bill hit that just wasn't legitimate.
All right, now, the second thing you said, they didn't like the association with George W. Bush. Did they not like it because they don't like George W., or did they not like it because it had that name-dropper, schmarmy thing? I had people tell me that, but, you know, they were fairly regular politicos, so I don't know. You know, I always kind of discount that kind of stuff. They didn't like it because it looked like what I'd said about Stafford trading off the associations, not a real clear direct endorsement type thing. What's your analysis of that? You read the polling. You did the polling. You talked to people.
They did like George W. Bush, and they sincerely respect him, liked him. We even saw that out of swing voters, even some Democrats. So that wasn't the issue. The issue was they identified him as someone who had been in D.C., who had been working in D.C., and who had likely caught the D.C. bug, much like we'd seen with K. Billy Hutchinson a few years back. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it was too schmarmy, too staffer-ish, and it looked a little inside baseball, and they just didn't like it.
I think the only time you and I spoke was one time. I don't even know if we spoke. Maybe it was an email, and it was months ago. Because you sent me as a member of the media some press on the race and asked a question, or maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was Mark Jones from Rice University, because he asks me questions occasionally. And I simply said the guy's been in Washington, D.C. on the government payroll his whole life. The other guy's a small businessman. That's really all you got to say. So you're saying that indeed that association did poll. Expand on that. Did that affect in a broader sense?
Yeah, and voters, it was clear to him. But when he said, I worked for George W. Bush in the White House, voters inherently knew, oh, so you've been on the taxpayer dime. And then I worked at Texas Tech. And as tuition rates continue to rise and soar, and middle class is just getting, you know, where they can't even afford college anymore. They just realized that.
Did that show up in your
sector.
Did that show up in your polling and analysis? The college cost.
It showed up in our verbatims. It absolutely did. Yes, sir. And that was just something voters inherently knew. It wasn't something we were out there with ads.
And I sure didn't talk about it. So you know, the ones in town that always want to blame me, it didn't come out. It didn't come out of here.
El Diablo de la Radio, Roberto Pratt.
We're visiting with Jordan Berry, consultant, campaign manager type guy for the Charles Perry for Senate campaign, going back to Charles' first House race and then second House race. And, Jordan, I want to continue. I want to talk about some what you guys did things, but this is fascinating to me. You all were doing rolling poll throughout the entire thing, and you mentioned some things that came up in your verbatims when people gave you quotes and things you were watching. One, they didn't like the main funded competitor, Arrington's message. The more he put his message out, the higher his negatives went. And you said first, the D.C.-itis, the linking to the job in D.C. They love Bush, respect Bush, but hey, here you are, you're just a D.C. staffer, you probably got the inside government disease. And then the Texas Tech stuff, they read that as, yeah, you're part of the rising cost in college tuition. And you actually got that, you affirmed, in your comments from people. So you began to see this. Pick it up from there. What other things did you see in that polling?
You know, I saw that one of the most interesting things I saw at the very end, and this generally does take a while to pick up on, was voters saying about Charles Perry, I met him. He was at an event. He was here or there. And I would go, okay, where is this person from? I would look at their county, and I would say, wow. I mean, for things like that to show up in verbatims, it's one thing when we're mass communicating a message and for voters to pick up on that. And, of course, we're going to see that in the poll. But when individuals start saying, I've met the candidate, that's strong. And I think it really speaks to Charles and the campaign manager, Travis McCormick.
Right. Travis
in the truck.
Travis is a doer.
Every single day. Oh, yeah.
Travis, that's why he was on the show here. Travis regularly reach out and try to book time. You know, these other people think they're getting slighted. I tell them on the show over and over, you got to contact me. I got a form at the website. It's there 24 hours a day. They never do it. Then they go around and grumble and say we didn't have him. Travis, he knows what he's doing. He calls. He emails on a regular basis. Can we schedule Charles? Can we schedule Charles? Yeah, I don't give them every opportunity they want, but I give it to them. And Charles Perry last night in the election show said, people still want to meet people. I made every effort I could to get in front of the people throughout the district. Another county chairman told me this quote, Arrington ran a big media campaign. Charles Perry ran a press the flesh campaign. Now, given they both had to, you have to have the media campaign, but Charles took it out to the retail level. That same county chairman in a small rural county told me that Arrington never made a personal call to him, but Charles did. And so you're saying this showed up in your poll. People notice. And that would explain places like Mason County that are in the hill country, way away from anything. They don't call themselves West Texans necessarily there. But Charles pulled just massively larger numbers.
Yeah, I'll say this. It's unusual when a state Senate seat is comparable to a congressional seat. People don't realize.
It's bigger. As I always tell people, it's a bigger district. Yeah.
It's actually bigger. And so presenting that to show up in the verbatims, man, it was a real testimony of what they did. But Travis and I worked together on Representative Springer, just east of Lubbock. We had worked together on the Cruz campaign. So I knew he was the right person.
Yeah, Travis is great. I think a lot of him, yeah. And Drew Springer, you know, thinks a lot of him. Let me ask you this question. You veered into with your polling some of the things y'all were doing right. Let's talk about the Perry message. You've talked about Arrington's message actually brought his negatives up. What about Perry's message? You all stayed, you were very disciplined on message. I just looked at the stack of mailers I received in the mail from you guys. Very disciplined. What did you tweak? What did you move? Where did the emphasis go? I know you had to react to this fairly strong misrepresentation of the water issue. What other things in there worked really stood out with you guys in your polling confirmed?
You know, from when I'm dealing with the candidate or the campaign manager, this is definitely where I'm the most boring because I just like a simple, concise message that we repeat over and over.
Buddy,
and over.
I used to do it too, and that was one of the hardest things to explain to people and then get them to stay on message. Charles Perry, very talented in that. We saw that in the very first race he ever ran.
Well, and I always tell my candidates, when people at Walmart or United, when they start repeating your message back to you, when they see you and go, oh, you're the CPA church deacon who's passed a voter ID bill, once that starts happening, we know we've saturated the market, and I'm willing to maybe switch up a little bit. But until that happens, and it was funny because Charles and I were actually at a polling place yesterday at Calvary, and a guy came up to him, and he started repeating one of our TV commercials. And, you know, it was almost a verbatim, and I was like, "Well, there you go. We saturated." So we saw that people just understood. I mean, it was really simple and clear. And Charles had a record to run on,
right? Exactly.
So for a lot of the district who did not know him, he was able to say, "This is specifically what I've done, and these were the things I promised in my Texas House campaign." And when people see that, they know they can look at your past and judge what you may be on the future.
All right.
And they're, you know, the world's on fire, Robert. And you know that better than anyone. The world is on fire. And no matter what level of government it is, they want to send someone who they can trust who will do the right thing. And Charles, they believe that in Charles.
Very, very good. Jordan Berry, give us real quickly, we're almost out of time. What are some of the other races you've worked on around the state of late?
Senator Cruz, Ken Paxton, who's going to be our new Attorney General, Congressman Lamar Smith, Brian Babin, who won the 12-way open race for the Stockman seat, and then we have several House candidates throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
All good conservatives.
Good. Jordan, appreciate it. Very good work. And thank you for the insights into the polling you were doing. It is fascinating to me as one of those folks that stays around this and hangs around it every day. Our best to you, and get to work. We got a lot of fall elections right ahead.
Thank you, sir.
Say one thing at home, vote another at Austin. With Brett on Texas, you'll know the real story.